This will be alive for our future consideration. So those of you that pick up on this video whenever, what you're going to hear is an opportunity to learn how to start a recovery journey ministry in the church setting. Or this might just be good information for yourself. So whether you're here just to learn for yourself, maybe some more recovery information, or you really want to get something started in your church, you're in the right place. So again, thank you for being here. I'm going to go through a PowerPoint today, and I will drop the PDF of this PowerPoint into the chat room in a little bit, just so you have some notes. But you can certainly go, as Kinson said, you can go to the New York City website, or you can go to my YouTube channel. This is all free, by the way. I don't really charge for these services in the future. So that's going forward. That's what we're going to do. So let me go ahead and get my PowerPoint up, and we'll get started. As we get going, please drop any questions you may have into the chat room. We will have time at the end. And in particular, we're going to have time for clarification questions. So if I say something that you're like, what was that about? Or I don't understand that. Or even I don't agree with that. Please put that in the chat room. Or you just have basic questions about the ministry. Honestly, you guys, when I built this ministry about a dozen years ago, I tried to build it in a very simple fashion. I didn't want it to be difficult to do this ministry. It's certainly not a my way or the highway kind of ministry. So what I do is I present with you materials and resources. I have a couple requirements, and then after that, you can kind of figure out how to do this thing. I would prefer that you keep fairly close to what I've presented, but oftentimes people add really good stuff to it. So I'm not opposed to that either. So let's go ahead and get started. It's called the Recovery Journey. We used to call this Disciples in Motion. You may have heard that term, but a couple of years ago, we rebranded and I wrote a new book called the Recovery Journey Book, which is a much fuller kind of approach to recovery. And so we're going to go through this today. And again, please take notes, write down questions, and we're going to have a great couple hours here, okay? So let's go ahead and get started. So first of all, people ask me, who comes to Recovery Journey? Like, is it just for people that are really hurting? Or, you know, that's what we typically think of. We think of recovery ministries. We think of people that are, you know, knee deep into drug addiction or whatever. But what I did was I decided that this is for any person with any issue. So the thing about a church setting that we have to understand is that our church setting is also our social setting. In other words, when I go to church, I'm there to worship, but I'm also there with my best friends normally. And so one of the things I decided was we want to allow everybody to have dignity. So I didn't like the idea of all the, for example, all the purity guys after midweek go downstairs to the church basement for their purity groups. I didn't like that idea. I felt like it was kind of singling people out. So we open it up to any person that has any issue in their life that interferes with their walk with God. And so that can go all the way from, you know, any kind of addiction issues, pornography, alcohol, drugs. It goes into things like bitterness and anger. Perhaps there's marriage problems that need to get worked out. We have people with character issues that they just want some space and time to work on something. Maybe there's childhood abuse issues that have come back up. There's just all sorts of things that seem to interrupt our walk with God. So what we do is we provide a 9-week opportunity to come in, to get yourself aligned with the recovery concepts of Jesus, and be with groups of people that are working on their own lives. And it's a very powerful environment that we provide. So the first thing to know is it's for any person with any issue. And it's funny, I'll say that three or four times, and I'll still get people come up to me at church. Now, who's allowed to come to this thing? And I just say, anyone with anything. So write that one down. Okay. Now, one thing that we've learned over the years is in the Bible, you have two different approaches to growth, and they're both very valid. But they also can get out of balance sometimes. And what we tend to do in our Christian walk is we tend to do what I call sin management. In other words, the majority of our focus can tend to be on getting rid of sin. And of course, that's a very biblical idea. It's throughout the scriptures. But I think we've got it out of balance. Because there's another side to growth, and that's called spiritual formation. And maybe you've heard more and more about that. There's a lot of books written on it. I know Robert Carrillo, one of the brothers in the LA church, he's finishing up his doctorate in spiritual formation. The university that I work at, one of them, is Rocky Mountain School of Ministry and Theology. And we actually have a degree in spiritual formation that one of the brothers in your church, Steve Kennard, is the dean for. And so I think there needs to be a balance of how much time do we spend with sin management and how much time do we spend with spiritual formation. So that's a conversation to have as you approach this kind of work, is we want to make sure we do both, okay? So we don't want people just to focus on getting rid of sin. We want them to also focus on becoming more like Jesus. As the book of Colossians says, we want Christ to be formed in you. So keep that in mind as you approach this. This is not a, you know, this isn't just get rid of a sin and then move on. This is actually an opportunity to become more like Jesus. So think about the focus of time and energy in your own approach. All right. Now, as we move on today, I want to ask you to do something for yourself. If we were in person, I would have you turn to the person next to you and say, what's one thing that you want to work on or are interested in recovery in your own life? So what I want to ask you to do right now is just in your own mind, think about something in your life that still bothers you, something that interferes with you. Whatever it is, just think about something and kind of park it in your brain for the next hour and a half or so that you want to work on. What area of your life needs some recovery in? Maybe it's, like I said, maybe it's some childhood issue or character issue or whatever. We all have something to work on. So take a second and just kind of stick that in your brain there for a moment. Okay, everybody's got something, I hope. So just keep that in the forefront of your mind as we go through these, because we're going to spend most of our day today looking at the 9 different devotionals. So as we look through devotionals, one of them, or at least one of them, is probably going to kind of hit you there like, oh, that's really helpful for me. And I know it's going to be helpful because we center all of our devotionals around the ministry of Jesus. So here we go. So the first thing we're going to talk about is think differently. You know, over the years, there's been a lot of great work done on recovery. So there's lots of good recovery ministries. You've probably heard of Celebrate Recovery. In our fellowship, there's Chemical Recovery. You know, groups like AA. They all have their place, and they're all really important. But one of the things when I developed Recovery Journey was there's some things I didn't feel comfortable with some of those ministries that we included in this ministry here. So here's some things I want to ask you to think about differently. Now, first of all, maybe the most important thing we do is we preach or we teach a person and not simply principles. So, for example, the ministries that I studied are all based on principles. And what they do is they'll say, here's a principle that you need to do or know about in order to get better. So, for example, let's talk about forgiveness. Forgiveness is a core principle of recovery. You'll find it in virtually every recovery ministry you run across that's Christian-based is forgiveness. So what I decided was it's more powerful to watch Jesus forgive somebody than it is to simply talk about the principle of forgiveness. So in recovery journey, as you'll notice in a moment, every recovery principle is illuminated by watching Jesus do it. Now, I know that sounds kind of simple, but it's much more powerful than simply talking about a principle. So, for example, with Recovery Journey, we go to Luke chapter 7 and we watch Jesus forgive a sinful woman in front of a lot of people that didn't think they needed forgiveness. That's way more powerful than simply talking about the concept of forgiveness. It just is. Jesus, when he does things, it just lights up the room. And when you study him doing things, you get a lot more out of it than simply reading about the principle. So that's one thing that's radically different in the recovery journey is we teach a person and not principles. And if you know me at all, you know that my number one focus in my life is the man Jesus. In all of Christianity, he's my guy. He's what I talk about the most. That's just the way it is. So call me single focus, but there you go. Number two is we're good with weaknesses. As a matter of fact, what I have found is that weakness. When you get a lot of people in a room together, we used to worry about this. We used to worry, like, what's going to happen when we get, 40 or 50 people in a room and they're all weak? And I was a little afraid of that at the beginning, like, is that going to like ruin everything? And what happens is it's a powerful bunch of people. There's a spirit in a room when people get together and they all kind of turn themselves in, like, all right, here I am. Let's go. There's a power in that. Jesus himself said this once. He said, when I am lifted up, I will draw all men to myself. Basically, Jesus said, when I am on the worst day of my life, the day I go to the cross, the weakest day of my life, when I'm just allowing people to do to me as they will, he said, on that day, that's when I draw people to myself. In other words, weakness draws people to God. And isn't that true for you in your relationship with Jesus? Like I love the Jesus on a white horse with power. He's got a sword coming out of his mouth, that kind of thing. I love him in that way. But what draws me to Jesus is watching him on the cross. When he allowed us to crucify him. That's what draws me to Jesus. So this ministry is perfect. All of my ministries are perfect for people that are not Christians yet. We advocate, please bring your friends. Please bring them in and let them watch Christians deal with their lives. It's very powerful. First and second Corinthians, Paul used the word Jensen, are we okay? I just got booted
Yeah.
off.
Yeah, it seemed like
Okay.
you froze for a bit.
Okay. All right. Don't be afraid to ever tell me, like, hey, Tim, quit talking.
Yeah, I was just about
Okay.
to jump in there.
Okay, cool. Thank you. So yeah, resources, guys. We tell people you need a lot of different resources in your life. This is going to be one of them that's a real support for you, but this is not going to be enough for you by itself. Like, you got to get out there and figure a lot of things out, but we're going to be your jumping point. We're going to be your home base, so to speak. But you only get us for 9 weeks to do this. So think resources. That's one thing for all of you guys that are going to lead these groups or facilitate these. You're not the end resource for these people. You're not going to be their discipler. You're not going to get phone calls at 11:30 at night, like, hey, I'm struggling. You know, that's not the way this works. We try to get people to plug back in to their church resources, especially. Like, we believe that ch
Tim, wait, you froze again. Hey, Tim, I'm not sure if you can hear us, but you're frozen.
It just said that he left.
I was just gonna say, I don't see him. I think, oh, there he is.
Tim? Tim, if you can hear us.
Okay, I apologize, you guys. I think I'm back.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, good. Good. I don't know what's going on, but my computer keeps messing up on me here.
Maybe keeping your camera off probably will keep it from lagging, because I know it draws more bandwidth with the camera and sharing.
Okay, good. So I can stop my video.
Yeah, just stop your video and we can still
Cool.
see your presentation.
Awesome. Very good. Okay, very good. Okay. So I think I was on dignity. That's really important. In the church setting, people have to feel like they have dignity as humans. So we don't do any shame-based approach to change. We don't try to guilt people into being different. We want people to have dignity. And we watch Jesus always does that, even with most of the people he works with, even the really re religious kind of enemies. Jesus tried to restore dignity to their lives. Number 5 is time and space. We simply give people time and space. We want to dedicate for them 1.5 hours every week where they can come in and they can work on something. So if nothing else, people appreciate, here's my spot. These are my people, and I can work on whatever I'm working on. We also help people develop resilience. So, guys, change doesn't happen overnight. It's often a battle. There's often really tough times that come up. But what we tell people is, if you stay in the battle here, you're going to develop resilience in your walk with God. And finally, as you and I both know, at the end of the day, we still are in desperate need of God's grace. Recovery is not about I finally got perfect and now God likes me again. That's not what it's about. We have to rely on the grace of God every step of the way to walk these journeys. So these are some of the ways that we think differently as we approach the recovery journey. Okay, we have what we call four hallmarks of the recovery journey. These are four verb laden statements that we hold out in front of people on a weekly basis in some form or another. These are four things that are foundational to recovery. And I want to review these with you. We review these with our members almost every week, or at least we review one of them. First of all, we tell people that walking with Jesus is your number one opportunity to get better. Hands down, your time with the Lord is going to do more for your recovery than anything else. So walking with Jesus is primary. As a matter of fact, every week in the book, we even have a place called Conversing with Jesus. It's really cool where you get to do these exercises on your own and to have prayer time with Jesus and talk to him about what you're here for. So walking with Jesus, there's just no substitute for it. And if you want to get better, that's the number one goal for you in the recovery journey, is walk with him. Number two, here's the one that we kind of have problems with some people with, is to get better, you're going to have to work a scripture-based program. So we have people that come to recovery journey for any number of different reasons. You know, like I said, all the way from addictions to character to whatever. And so, of course, it's impossible for us every week to go over all the different reasons you came. There's just too many different reasons. So what we tell people is you got to go find a program that is specific for your issue and start working that program. Now, typically, a program is as simple as a book. So let's say you're working on, you can't seem to forgive somebody, and it's been decades. You're going to want to get a book on forgiveness, and you're going to want to start working through that book on forgiveness, because it's going to specifically address your issue. So it's really important for people to go out and find something that is going to walk them through their problem. It might be an internet-based program. For example, there's one called Setting Captives Free for purity issues, for drug abuse issues, for anxiety problems. It's all free. They're 60-day programs. It's amazing. You get online, settingcaptivesfree.com. You get online and they walk you through your issue. And there's questions to answer. Well, even if you want, they'll send your answers to your mentor or your discipler, whoever you choose. And they get it on a daily basis. And they can call you up and say, hey, I just reviewed your answers and got a question about this or whatever. So it's a very user-friendly program. And again, it's all free. It's called settingcaptivesfree.com. But there's any number of different scripture-based programs that are out on the market. Some are free. Some it's a $15 book that you buy. But we really advocate, get out there and get yourself a program. It'll really help you a lot. Number three is we ask people to engage a mentor. All recovery is socially focused. In other words, all recovery needs to have another person involved. And you guys all know that. It's called the church, right? You know, we all have friends and mentors in our churches. And when you're in recovery, the same thing has to happen. You got to get out there and find somebody. Now, you can't sit around and wait for someone to come to you. You want to go find a mentor. And a mentor is simple as somebody who's maybe a little bit further ahead than you are in your problem. So if you're working on a pornography issue, you want to find somebody that's further down the road and has learned some lessons, and they'll get with you once a week during your time at Recovery Journey. I always tell people, make sure you go out and buy the coffee for them. you know, meet them at Starbucks on a Saturday morning or something, buy their lunch or buy their dinner, and let them know what's going on in your journey, and you know, ask them for their advice, their help, their support, their prayers, whatever. But you want to have a mentor in your life. And as I look around our fellowship of churches, that's been harder and harder to do. You know, some people are just kind of in a space right now where they're not really, really getting the help they need like we used to. So we tell people, go find a mentor. And then finally, this one's really important, is as you work on your recovery, begin to nurture a dream for God that's bigger than you are. You might think, well, I can't do that. I'm trying to overcome this. But when you nurture a dream, it helps pull you through your recovery. In other words, it gives you something bigger than you that God has to be involved in. So we ask people, even in the middle of your hardest moments, have a dream that you're working on. So for example, my dream has always been to have recovery groups in all of our fellowship churches. And I started that dream about a dozen years ago, and it's been great. It's been helping to pull me through my own issues and keep me focused, because it's more important than even myself. Like it's an important thing. So have a dream. Make sure you got something that's keeping you motivated. So those are called the four hallmarks of the recovery journey. And we normally review one of these every week. And we might even have somebody stand up and share some good news about one of them. So for example, on a certain week, I might just decide, let's talk today for just a moment about engaging a mentor. Does anybody have any good news to share about that? And somebody might stand up and say, yeah, my mentor is amazing, and she really helped me with this. The final thing before we move on is you'll notice that every one of these begins with a verb. So they're action-oriented statements. So these are not passive. These are not things that are done to you. These are things that you go out as a member and you go out and do these things. So they're active. So we don't want people just to show up and say, hey, here I am, do something for me. We want people to know right away that this ministry is on you, and this is something that you're going to have to really get involved in. Okay, let me review a couple of things here, then we'll move on. We have what we call six tenets. So again, these are just kind of like foundational truths of this ministry. And some of these are a little different than you might be used to. We've already talked about Jesus, that he's the central feature of everything we do. And he's one of the two things that I always ask people, if you're going to do the recovery journey, you have to keep Jesus in the middle. So if he's not in the middle of it, then call it something different. But in my mind, I built this ministry completely revolved around Jesus and his ministry. So we put him forefront of everything, okay? Secondly, though, is we believe in the importance of the individual. So at the recovery journey, this isn't really the church trying to get you straightened up. You know, the church has its role in the individual that we don't. So for example, the church, you know, has like an authoritative role in our lives, right? We have elders and all that. And the church even has a voice at times that says, here's the direction we're going in. And that's great. That's what the church needs to do. And we fall underneath the church's authority in that way. But we also are here for the individual. In other words, the individual has to make this thing work. They can't wait for the church to tell them what to do. The individual is primary as far as if they come or not. So for example, people can come and go as they please at the recovery journey. We ask them, once you come, please continue to come, because it really is good for you and it's good for other people. But we're not going to track you down if you don't come. So I would say, you know, just to let you know, a good number of people that start this journey, they don't complete it. Sometimes up to half of people that show up at the beginning are not there at the end. And we've just kind of come to expect that. That's part of recovery is people, sometimes they come and go, just like recovery comes and goes. It's best if you come, but we're not going to track you down. We're not going to ask questions. It is totally up to you. I had a brother who's a good friend of mine. Actually, he was really struggling with pornography. And he would come maybe once or twice, and then I wouldn't see him again. And then the next session, he'd come once or twice. And, you know, he just wasn't ready yet. And then one session, he came, and he came with his whole family. He brought his wife and I think two of his three kids, and they stuck around the whole time. And I thought, there he is. He's finally kind of figured it out. And he stayed the whole time, and he's doing much better now. So we leave it up to the individual to make that decision on whether or not they're going to come. Here's the other big, big, big thing we do outside of Jesus being the center is we insist on you providing a safe and confidential environment. This is essential. If you don't have this, then don't do the ministry because it won't work. People have to know that when they come, that what they say is going to stay in that room. And we are very, very hardcore about this. So when people come, it's safe and it's confidential. And we remind people almost on a weekly basis that what is said in this room stays in this room. And what is said in the small groups stays in the small groups. And if you can't abide by that, then you definitely don't want to be coming. And again, the reason is if people think that what I say is going to get out, then they're not going to say it. And they're not going to be able to deal with their hearts. So they have to know safe and confidential environment. Now, of course, they're in the state of New York and in Colorado and all the other states of the U.S. and most foreign countries as well. There are three different times that you're not allowed to be safe and confidential, that the law says you cannot. If somebody wants to harm themselves and they speak about that, then you as a ministry leader or whatever have to go get some help for that. So that's the one that we hear the most of is somebody, when people start feeling safe and confidential, they might start saying things like, you know, this week I thought about killing myself, thought about, you know, taking my life. And when you hear things like that, you've got to go report it. A second one is if they're going to go harm another person. So, you know, somebody says, you know, my father abused me and I'm going to go kill him because he did that, or I'm going to go burn down the minister's house or something like that. You're not allowed to hold on to that. You have to go report that to the authorities. And then finally, if somebody's talking about currently being abused, if they're like there's elder abuse sometimes, or if a teenager opens up about being sexually abused, we're not allowed to hold on to that information. We have to go get help for that. And what I recommend people do is in your church setting, there's probably professional counselors that are members of your church. If you could just get those people to kind of be your phone call away from, can I bounce something off you? Somebody said this today, and I need to get your advice on what we should do from here. So find those people in your church. They don't have to attend the meetings or anything, but they can be a resource for you. When you do hear things that you need to talk to somebody else about. And typically, like I said, typically it's somebody that's talked about harming themselves. And typically it doesn't rise to the level of calling the police. It usually rises to the level of calling your minister, your women's ministry leader, things like that, and making sure that person has some resources wrapped around them for the next couple of weeks. So safe and confidentiality. Like I said before, we rely on church structure. So we want people to be going to church. We want them plugging into their discipling relationships. We want people reading their Bibles. Whatever the church is doing, we really advocate you guys should be part of that church structure. And of course, for visitors, it's great. Like, wow, this is a chance for you to really get plugged in to people that can help you. So church structure is important. We are supportive in nature. Like I said before, we're not the only show in town. There's other groups that can help you as well. But we are a group that can really support your journey. And then finally, we rely heavily on the cross of Jesus and our identity as Christians, which you'll notice in a few moments. So these are tenets. These are like different things that we really supports our ministry. Okay, what's a typical meeting look like, you say? And again, I wrote this book in a way that a typical meeting can be about anything you choose. So first of all, a typical meeting could be one person that buys the book and goes through the book on their own. And and you know, it's some people just get the book and they're like, I'm good, leave me alone, I just want to read the book. Or a typical meeting could be two people that buy the book together and they're like, let's do this for our discipling times, you know, or let's just do this together and help each other. And then all the way up to, we have Bible talks that do this. So we've had Bible talks get together for 9-week series and they work through the book together as a Bible talk. That's really common in somebody's living room and they invite their visitor friends. And then of course, a lot of people do this as a church setting. So they may do it after church on Sundays in one of the rooms in the building there. And they'll run 9-week groups. And that's how they do theirs. That takes a little bit more organization, but that's a very typical way of doing the recovery journey. So typical meetings can be all over the map. We start off with the devotional time. And in the devotional time, people that are coming have already read the chapter and they've already done some journaling in the book. So really the devotional time is a simple review and a highlight of what people have already done. So you may start off with about a 20 to 25 minute devotional time. We make them very interactive. In other words, guys, I don't want this to be a boring time. I've gone to recovery groups before that. It's like watching paint dry on a wall. I mean, they're just boring. So we want people to interact. When I lead these groups, I typically have like large group questions. Like I'll throw a question out there. Sometimes people might share a brief testimony during devotional time. But basically what we're doing is we're highlighting the chapter that they just got through reading that week. Okay. Or some people, they decide to be a week behind everybody. And they do a chapter that people get ready to read. So it kind of depends on what you want to do with that. But the devotional time should be pretty lively. And you're just going to highlight. And you'll see when I say highlight, each week has a kind of like a specific point. Like I said before, you may take a few minutes to highlight one of the hallmarks. And then after the devotional, we simply get into groups of three people. And let me reiterate that, three people. Okay, we don't want four or five because then people don't get enough time to share and people tend to hide. So what we say is keep the group down to three or below. And these are what we call connection groups. So you have three people together. The only way we divide them up is by gender. So we have all the guys go to one room, all the girls go to another room, and they go into groups of three. And they're not specific to the different problems. So we don't, so if, you know, let's say you got three guys that come for purity issues, you don't have to have three guys together that are all working on the same problem. If they want to, they can. You can get three guys and they say, hey, we're going to, the three of us are going to get together. We're going to do the same book together. That's great. They can do that. But you don't have to. You can get a guy with purity issues, a guy with bitterness issues, and maybe a guy working on his marriage. And they could be a small connections group. So, and the reason for that, by the way, is that we're not there to figure out our problems. We're there to figure out our future and our solutions. And in recovery, most recovery looks about the same. In other words, the same concepts need to happen. So you get in connection groups. Each person gets 10 minutes to talk in the connection group. And that talk is uninterrupted. So nobody's allowed to interrupt them. You're just not. You just let people talk. Even if they say things that are kind of weird, you don't get to interrupt or disciple them at all in the group. We ask people to speak in the I only. So they're not there to complain about their wives or spouses. They're not there to talk about the minister, what a bad guy he is or something. They're only there to talk about themselves. And that's really important. People need to focus on their own hearts. So we tell people, keep it in the eye, be respectful by listening and not interrupting. Even if you're going to interrupt, say, oh, that's a great point you just made. We don't want to do any interruptions, so no crosstalk. It's not a conversation group. Now, when the recovery journey is over for the day, you can crosstalk all you want, or you can disciple or mentor. You can do whatever you want to do after the groups are over. But when that person has their 10 minutes, then they get to have 10 minutes of uninterrupted talk time. And in the book, those are guided by questions that we ask. So they'll have their book with them, and we put a couple questions to guide that conversation. Or if it doesn't work for them, they can just talk about whatever in their recovery. And then finally, in the book, there's what we call the Digging Deeper Journal. And the Digging Deeper Journal is a couple of pages in each chapter where we ask questions to dig deeper into your issue. And so whatever you heard last week at the recovery journey, how did that impact you? And that's why most people, what they want to do is they want to stay a chapter behind. So you'll hear a devotional. Let's say if you're a member of the group, you'll hear a devotional, and then you're going to go home that week and you're going to do a little journaling about that devotional in the book. And we call it digging deeper. In other words, you're trying to take the devotional and have it make more sense for your issue. And then finally, like I said before, we have a place called Conversing with Jesus in each chapter. And it's a exercise that you can, it's basically a prayer time with Jesus. So you'll read all about that. It'll make sense to you. So we use this book though quite a bit, you guys, in our ministry. The book's really important, kind of as a platform for people. Okay, now we're going to jump into the 9 weeks of recovery journey devotionals. And I'm going to kind of rip through these pretty quick. All of this, by the way, is in the back of the book. So there's an appendix in the back. I believe it's appendix C, on how to lead a recovery journey group. So all the stuff I'm covering today is in the back of the book. And these are the 9 devotionals that I created. And let me say something to make your life easier. These devotionals that I created are, there's a lot of material in them. You don't have to do all the material. Matter of fact, I don't want you to. I want you to make these your own. So each week, there's going to be one point that you want to make, but you want to make these things your own devotionals. I don't know if you've ever done this, but I've been handed work before where somebody says, okay, next week, when you're leading a Bible talk, do this Bible talk. And it's always really hard, isn't it? It's kind of like, I didn't create this thing. It's hard for me to do it. So I want you to make these your own. But I think this really good material. So make sure that when you make them your own, that you're covering the essential parts of the devotional. Okay. So let's go over these things. I'm going to go over each one briefly. And again, make sure you put questions in the chat room if you got them. Okay, the first devotional is called Jesus's Creative Heart to Heal. And the point we're trying to make is this. It's faith in Jesus and not a program for us to change. In other words, Jesus is our heart, our springboard. He's our route, whatever you want to call it, our avenue to make change. He is intimately involved in us as we go about making changes. And in this one, it's really cool. We go through all the different healings in the New Testament. It takes about 3 or 4 minutes, and I just read them all out really quick. I read like one sentence from each healing. And at the end of our devotional, we get this idea that Jesus is bent on getting people better. I mean, you look through the New Testament, and it's remarkable how much time Jesus spent helping the hurting. And he did it in a way that was very creative, right? I mean, I marvel at him. He'll spit on the ground, make some mud, and rub it in some guy's eyes. Or one time he just stuck his finger in somebody's ears. One time he picked up somebody's ear that had been chopped off, and he just stuck it back on the guy's head. One time a person who was blind, Jesus healed him. And Jesus said, like, you know, are you okay now? And he goes, nah, all I see are trees walking around. And Jesus is like, okay, hold on a second. And then he does it again, and the guy can see. Jesus was very creative. He did it in front of people that were mad at him, you know, like the religious people. He did it with people he wasn't supposed to be talking to. He did it to lepers that he wasn't supposed to be around. You know, the disciples like, don't touch him, you know. Jesus was very, very creative in the way he helped people. And so we tell people, let Jesus be creative in your life. Like, don't just expect the normal recovery stuff. You know, we all get used to these things that we think are going to happen. But Jesus himself is very creative in his work. He really wants people to understand that creativity is the very character of God. If you have a window right now, take a look outside. It's pretty creative out there. And spring's coming. It's getting ready to be really creative. God has creation at the very core of his character. So when we're getting better, we ask people, open yourself up to the creative nature and heart of Jesus. And we get to hear really cool stories from that. So that's the first week. Obviously, this first week, we spent a little more time because we have to explain the ministry to people. So we have to talk to them about, these are the four hallmarks. Here's the book you need to make sure you get. You need a scripture-based program. You know, we kind of throw out the whole framework of the ministry, and it can be a bit much for people. So, you know, this first week is maybe a good hour and a half to 2 hours, because there's a little bit more room to cover. We have to tell people, hey, we're not going to hunt you down if you don't come, but we want you to be here. We're going to talk to people about, bring your friends if you want. Bring your mentor to a meeting. That's great. These meetings are very open-ended. So we do a lot this first week. You may have to stick around a little bit to answer questions, but it's a pretty powerful week. We also acknowledge the fact that people barely get in there sometimes. There's some people that barely make it through the front door. And we have to honor that and really assure them, like, you're in the right place. We're really glad you're here. We honor the fact that there's not going to be any judgment in this room today. No one's here to talk about you. This is your time to be accessing recovery. So that's week number one, Jesus's creative heart to heal. And we advocate that faith in Jesus and not the program is what's going to get your change going. All right, the second week is really a cool week. It's called Innocence and Identity. And if you're curious, that's me on the left there, the little guy, and two of my brothers. And we had a little Volkswagen Beetle back in the day. And that was one of my pictures I found that that I remember. I was still very innocent back then. I didn't have a care in the world. Nobody had ever hurt me before. I was just loving life, right? And you can see that in the smiles and the face of my two brothers there. We were just loving life. We thought everything was funny. And so what we talk about in Innocence and Identity is we ask people to go back to a time in their life where they felt innocent. And you know, so people talk about when I was 5 years old, I rode my bike around the neighborhood, or I was on a soccer team or things like that. And they talk about innocence. And we talk about how that's how God created us. You guys, I have a little four-year-old granddaughter, and she's the epitome of innocence. Like, there's just nothing about her where life has tainted her yet. So we talk about that, and then we talk about what happened to you. And that's where it gets flipped. And then people say things like, well, you know, I started hanging out with a bad bunch of people, or my uncle abused me, or, you know, I got caught up in this, or my mom and dad got divorced, or things like that happened. And people start talking about how their innocence got ruined. And then life went downhill. And so what we talk about with innocence and identity, we talk about the fact that the cross buys us a new identity. In other words, if we want to get back to innocence, we go through the cross. And the problem is, and this is what we focus in on this week, is that we've lost our innocence because of the devil. And the thief comes to only steal, kill, and destroy. So we talk about the way we have an enemy, and that the cross of Jesus is what gives us a new identity. And so we do this exercise. This is one of my favorite things I do. When I do in-person workshops, I do this with the whole crowd. We do this exercise on our identity. And stay with me on this, okay, guys? Because this is life-changing for a lot of people. In this week, we've asked people, what happened to you? And usually people say things like, well, you know, people think I'm fat, or they think I'm stupid, or I've got a special education diagnosis, or I've always been told I'm too skinny, or I'm too smart, or I'm not smart enough. And we start labeling ourselves. We start giving ourselves these names that others might have given us. And we start living our lives based on these labels. And think about it for yourself for just a moment. Is there something in your life that maybe even as a child, somebody said to you that you kind of carried the rest of your life? I don't know. Maybe something happened to you. Somebody died. I don't know. Maybe something really bad trauma-wise happened. Maybe you just developed a really bad habit of sin. And that's what you carry around. So what happens is, when you become a Christian, the cross wipes away that old identity and it gives you a new one. And so I tell people there are there's over 80 places in the Bible, up to 100, of our identity that God lays out for us. And I ask people, we're going to do an exercise and you're going to have to help me out here. So I get somebody from the audience to come up in front. And I asked that person, can you count to 100? They're like, yeah, I can count to 100. I say, okay, good. Because what we're going to do right now is the crowd is going to start yelling out everything they know that the Bible says about who we are. What is our identity? And I tell people in the crowd, listen, guys, there's about 80 of these things. So get to work right now. Get thinking about it. And when I say three, start yelling out these things. One, two, three. And then people start yelling out all these words here. We're children of light. We're loved. We're adopted. We have clear consciences. Precious, royalty, blessed. You know, people are just yelling out all these words. We're ambassadors. We're living stones, new creation. People are just yelling and yelling. We're alive. You know, people are coming up with all these things from the Bible about what God says about us as Christians that were bought at the cross. And it gets really chaotic, actually, is what happens. It gets very chaotic. And the guy on the stage counting just can't even do it anymore. So it usually lasts about 2 or 3 minutes. And then I just say, all right, stop, stop, stop. I said, this is chaotic, and that's the point. The point is God goes through extreme measures to convince us of who we are. And that's why it's chaotic, because he's done so much in the Bible to convince us as his children that we are no longer to be labeled what we think we are. We're to be labeled what God says about us. And that's God's choice. He's done that on purpose. And this is vital. It's not because of a quiet time that you had, and you don't get these labels because, you know, you're evangelistic yesterday. These are simply your identification in Christ because of him dying on the cross. And that's nothing you had anything to do with. You simply passively allowed yourself to be baptized into the cross. You accepted that gift of grace, and then the cross bought you all these things. So these are your possessions. These words belong to you. Whether or not you had a good day or a bad day, these are yours. And you don't have to live any longer under, I'm fat, I'm lazy, I'm this or that. Now, those are things you might have to be working on as a Christian. That doesn't mean you shouldn't work on things. But your identity is based in what God says about you, which is based on the fact that Jesus died for you. And guys, this is really important because our fellowship, the ICOC, there were times in our fellowship where we were very humanistic, and we talked about, you know, sharp people, and we talked about, you know, let's go conquer the world and things like that. And we kind of put aside God's role in our identity and people that were really, you know, really doing well with life, they did pretty good, and people that were struggling didn't do as well. So this is week number two, identity, innocence and identity. I've actually had people come back to me after this week. I had a guy once say, gosh, Tim, he said, that thing last week was really good. He goes, I went home and thought a lot about it. He said, then I tried to get on pornography. He said, I tried to like get on my computer and look at impurity stuff. He goes, I couldn't do it. He goes, all those names that were shouted out last week, they just kept rattling around my brain. And I couldn't look at this stuff because of what my identity is. And so it really changed this person even that week. So this is innocence and identity. And then week number three is called brokenness or denial. And in brokenness and denial, we go to the man who had been an invalid for 38 years. Okay. hold on just a second. I'm sorry. Hold on. I gotta back to something here. We go back and we talk about the need for us to be broken about our sin. Now, this one's kind of hard to teach, actually, because brokenness is a bit of a it's just a difficult concept. It can be a little bit vague in the scriptures, but we go back and we talk about the idea that until we get to the point that we're broken about our sin or our problem, and that we understand that we're not able to fix it on our own, that we need God's help for that, until we get to that point, we're probably not going to change much. In other words, if we're still blaming other people, things like that, and there's not this brokenness of, God, I cannot do this without you, then we're probably not going to get better. So we talk to people about what is brokenness and what brings about brokenness. And one of the ways it helps people is we share with them the idols in their life. And then this week, what we do is we talk about the idea that, you know, it's kind of like this iceberg you see. You know, the iceberg, about 10% is what you see above the water, but 90% of it is below the water. And we say our dysfunction or our recovery is often similar. Is, for example, the bitterness somebody might have in their lives, you can kind of see it coming out in different ways. But if you start asking questions and getting below the surface, you're going to find a big story back there. You're going to find an idol, possibly, that that person is worshiping. And we've kind of broken idols into three major ones. The idol of comfort, the idol of control, or maybe the idol of significance. And we basically say most everything in your life that's a problem goes back to one of those three things. It goes back to the fact that that you're worshiping a significant idol, for example. That's one of my big ones, is I had this thing about significance, and sometimes that's an idol that I can serve. Or, you know, people have that idol of control in their life. And so we ask people in the journaling aspect that week, they're going to go back and kind of like identify in their lives, what are the idols that I serve? Comfort, control, significance, and how can I maybe begin to attack some of those things that are below the surface? So this is kind of a hard one to teach. The third week I've always found a little bit challenging, but it's a really important one, because people need to kind of come to grips with the fact that if they're going to change, it's because God and His Spirit is going to be about, is going to be working in their lives. So that's really important. Okay, week number four. This one's pretty cool. So this is called Miracle and Change. Legion changes his community. In this story, we go to Mark chapter 5, and we look at Jesus changing his community. And how did he do it? He did it by helping the demoniac, right? So we know the story. The demoniac's out of control. People couldn't keep him under control. They tried to put chains on him. The guy was like cutting himself with stones, and it was just a disaster, right? And so Jesus helps this guy, and it's really interesting when he gets done helping him. In Mark 5, it says that that when the people walked by, they saw that the man was dressed and in his right mind. So we focus on, you know, we make a point about dignity, him being dressed, that God gave him, Jesus gave back his dignity by putting clothes on the man. But then it says he's in his right mind. So the majority of what our discussion is on this week is repentance. And repentance simply means to change the way you think and feel. So it's a pretty broad term, actually. But so this week, what we talk about is what ways of thinking have been problematic to you, and how can you straighten up your thinking? And So this is really important because a lot of our dysfunction or our problems go back to the way we think. You know, I think we talked about that a few weeks ago with innocence and identity, that we get caught up in thinking improperly about ourselves. So what we do in this week is we talk about how do we straighten up our thinking? What ways can we think differently so that we can act differently? And here's a quote that I use. And this is particularly in line with reading your Bible. And here's the quote. Jesus speaks into our hearts the solution to our life's problems. You see it throughout the Gospels. He speaks simplicity into life's complexities with words that cut right to the core of who we are and what we need for change. Okay, let me break that down for a moment. You guys have all read your Bibles, right? A lot. Some of you have been doing this thing for over 40 years. And you can read the same story over and over again and obviously get different things out of it. Have you ever had a problem? And you go get your quiet time going the next morning and you read a story about Jesus and his teaching. And all of a sudden that story just like hits you in the forehead. Like, oh my gosh, that just answered my problem. You see, our life's problems can be very complex. If you think about your life's pretty complex. You got a lot of things going on. You got a lot of moving pieces. And when you get a problem going, obviously it can get really chaotic. But then when you read Jesus and his teaching, especially in the Gospels, it's so simple. He has an ability to speak simplicity into our complexity, and he uses words that cut right to the heart of what's going on. And we remind people of that, like, listen, guys, you often need just to change the way you think. And the way you change your thinking is by reading about what Jesus thinks and his answers to stuff. And so we remind people, get back in the scriptures and learn how to change the way you think. And so in the book that week, the journaling part of the book, we're going to ask you questions about the way you think. And you're going to write some things down about your dysfunctional thinking. And then we'll say, go find a verse in the Bible that goes against that way of thinking. And we're just trying to train people to learn to think differently about their issues in life. And so this is a big one. And of course, what happened is pretty cool. The guy, the demoniac, remember what he did? He's like, oh, I want to go with you, Jesus. And Jesus said, go back to your towns. And go back, tell people what the Lord has done for you. And most of us say, oh yeah, he got back, got really evangelistic. I think what he did, if I know dysfunction very well, I think one thing he had to do is go back and just apologize to people in his hometown. You know, his life had become a disaster. And so you know that he hurt people. I mean, people with dysfunctional lives, it doesn't take them long to go hurt somebody else. So my best guess is that he went back and the way he quote might have been evangelistic was by going back and apologizing to those that he had hurt. And the people were so amazed at the change in his life that they wanted to come out and meet this man, Jesus. So anyways, that's miracle and change. Jesus changes the whole community. And then there's this one here, trust and fear. So this one's pretty cool. This is a story about Jesus and the Canaanite woman, right? And remember that, you know, he's with this woman and her daughter is really ill. And so she comes to Jesus, for she's the wrong religion. She's a Canaanite. You know, she's not really supposed to be with him. And he wasn't supposed to be with her. But she's bold because she has such a great need in her life. You know, that's one of the things that leads people to recovery is when they have such a great need that they're willing to do anything. right? So this woman was willing to break through all these cultural barriers and access this man, Jesus, whom she had heard about. So she's like, Jesus, change my, you know, help my daughter. She's going to die. And Jesus says, ah, you know, I really didn't come to help your daughter. I didn't come to help you people. I'm only here for the Jews. And when I first read that a long time ago, I thought, come on, Jesus, help this lady out. You know, did you not drink your coffee this morning or something? Like, come on. And, but he did. He said, you know, I'm not here to help you. And then the woman in her boldness said, she goes, Jesus, even the dogs get to eat crumbs from the table. It was a really bold thing to say, by the way. And she kind of laid it on the line, like, I'm here to get help for my daughter. You better help me out. And Jesus, instead of being offended, he says, I've never seen such great faith in all Israel. Like, he was super impressed. He said, go home. Your daughter's well. Okay. Jesus's thing here was, if you overcome your fear with trust, a lot of good things are going to happen. Your faith is going to grow. So here we teach that love overcomes fear. We always end this week up with 1 John chapter 4, where it says there is no fear in love, but perfect love drives out fear. So this week is all about our faith. And what we tell people, as a side note, is in your recovery, you're going to get pushback. Your recovery is not going to be simple. In other words, it's not going to just happen. Chances are really good that you're going to get some pushback on it. And you got to be ready. And we'll even talk about what are the different things that might happen as you get better. There might be people in your life that get mad at you, like, oh, look at you, Mrs. So-and-so, you know, or you might get your old friends coming back and say, come on, you know, let's go do this. You're going to get pushback. It might be coming from the inside of your own heart, like doubts arise, that kind of thing. And that the way you overcome that fear is by trusting and loving. And so you got to build your trust. You got to build your faith. You got to build your ability to love other people, love, even love yourself. That's essential in order to get better. And so this is a really interesting week. And people really click into this week because they all feel, by this time, we're 5 or so weeks into it, they're starting to feel some of this. They're starting to articulate, yeah, this happened last week, or maybe I relapsed. You know, when somebody goes back into their old way of living, they might say, yeah, I had a really bad week. But, you know, this is where we just talk to people about trust and fear. And then when they get in their small group, the discussion questions are wrapped around this topic. Then we have maybe perhaps the most powerful of all the weeks. At least this is the one that I probably get more people come back to me and talk to me about. It's called Forgiveness and Power. A Broken Woman is Forgiven, Luke chapter 7. And this is that story about the woman. The Bible, the heading calls her a sinful woman. That's not a scripture, by the way. It's just with the translator second there. It just says she was broken. And something happened in her life where she was broken. And she comes into this room with Jesus being in there with all the religious guys, who, by the way, forgot to wash his feet or didn't wash his feet. And she comes into a very difficult situation, and she doesn't really care about these religious guys. She just comes in and just is broken in front of him. And you know the story. She cries so much, that so many tears, that she's able to wash his feet with her hair and her tears. It's powerful, you guys. That's a lot of, I don't know if you've ever wept before. There's been a few times in my life where I've just wept, openly wept. And that's a lot of tears to cry, that you can actually clean somebody's dirty feet with. But that's what she did. And Jesus forgave her right in front of everybody. And that was an audacious thing for him to do. He wasn't supposed to be doing stuff like that. So it got all these Pharisees and religious people all stirred up. And then he was able to do some teaching later on that. But with the woman, he forgave her. And so we talk about the power of forgiveness and how it changes our hearts and it changes our relationships we have with other people. And we just talk about that, that, you know, we talk about what was it like when you were first forgiven by God. You know, we take people back to their baptism days. Like, what was that like for you guys? We talk about since you became a Christian and God has forgiven you in different ways, what's that like for you? And how powerful is it? And how does it change your life? How does it change your closest relationships? So forgiveness and power, it's one of those weeks that people will probably come back to you and say, whoa, that was a good one because it really changed my heart. So forgiveness and power is a great devotional. And then devotional number seven is called Relationships and Community, Five Friends, Faith. And in this one, this is Mark chapter 2, where the four people, the four friends lifted the invalid up on the roof, and then they lowered him into the roof where Jesus was holding a Bible talk. And the house was so crowded they couldn't get the front door. So what we talk about here, it's really interesting to me. The Bible says in Mark 2 that some people brought the invalid. So that means more than four. There are a lot of people that brought this guy in. And then four people took a hold of it. And when Jesus healed the man, the Bible says, when Jesus saw their faith, he healed the man. So in other words, we talk to people about you need to have friends in your life that are faithful for you to get better. You're not going to do it on your own. This invalid needed four really faithful friends, but he also needed a community around him. And then I ask a really intriguing question that people don't like sometimes. I'll ask the question, I'll say, what was it about the invalid that endeared him to so many people? Because an invalid doesn't have much to offer people, right? But for some reason, a lot of people faithfully took it upon themselves to get this guy healed. So I'll say, what is it about you that people want to get involved in your life? Like, there's a little bit of responsibility for you just to be a good person, like to be a good friend, so that people want to be around you. And it's an intriguing question. I'm like, I don't know the answer to it. Maybe you just need to go and make sure that you're the kind of person that other people want to help. But do you have four different friends in your life that take care of you in different ways? And I've even labeled the four friends different, kind of given them different names. I'll say, do you have somebody in your life who's your relator friend? Like somebody that's been through what you're going through. You need somebody like that. You need somebody that's a step ahead of you, like your mentor. You need a friend who's a listener. You have somebody that's good enough just to listen to you long enough where you can empty your heart out. That's a hard friend to find sometimes, by the way, is that listener person. But you got to find them. Do you have a friend who's a truth teller, what I call them, somebody that's willing to actually speak truth to you when your life gets out of whack? That's an important friend to have, somebody that's willing to give you some guidance in your life from the scriptures. And finally, do you have people that are just plain old friends? In other words, I like to have friends that don't do recovery with me. I don't want my life to be only about recovery or grief or whatever I'm dealing with. I also need people that simply want to be my friend. They just want to go out and hang out and do things together. So this is the community part of recovery. And, again, in small groups, people talk about the great need they have and who they have and all that. And then our final 2 weeks are kind of a little bit interesting, I think. Week number 8 is called Finally Seeing the Obscure Becomes Clear. And in this story, what we're talking about is we're talking about what's been helpful so far for you. And we do the story about the two blind guys, and one of the guys Jesus healed with mud. I think it was mud. And he said, oh, I don't see very well. I just see people that look like trees walking around. And Jesus goes, okay, hold on a second. And then he does it again. And the guy goes, oh, good. Now I can see clearly. We talk about how in our recovery, oftentimes we don't get better on our timeline, but we can always, what I do call consolidate change. We can always say, I've made progress. Maybe I'm not perfect yet, but I've made progress. And so in this week, week number 8, we review all the different lessons we've done, and people share which one's been most helpful to them. So we do a brief review, and then as a large group or in small groups, we'll just say what's been most helpful. And somebody might say, oh, that one on the creative heart of Jesus to heal us, that was the biggest one for me, and here's why. And people kind of review their journey so far, and they talk about what's been most useful, and they're consolidating change. In other words, they're saying, I've made this progress, and now I'm going to keep going. We tell people progress and not perfection. So as long as you're making progress, then you're okay. You don't have to perfectly be somewhere. You just want to make sure you're making progress. And we talk about some different things like, you know, what's your purpose? Are you praying? Are you sharing with other people? Things like that. But this is kind of like a review week for people. And it's really helpful. It's really helpful for people to review what they've done and how they can do more of it. And then our final week is the man born blind. And we do the whole chapter 9 of John. And in the man born blind, we talk the most about where are you going from here? This is our final week of the recovery journey. Excuse me. What are you going to do when today's over with? What are your plans to keep going forward? And so in our big group or small groups, people come up with their plans on what are they going to do after today. So we'll hear things like, you know, maybe the three brothers in a purity group, they'll say things like, you know, every Sunday morning now, the three of us are going to get together for check-in time. And we're just going to spend 30 minutes before church talking about how we're doing. Or there might be a couple of sisters that say, you know what? What we're going to do is we're going to finish the book we started. We're only halfway done with the book. So we're going to do a book club or something like that. So people come up with their plans for the rest of the year, or at least until we meet again as a recovery journey group. By the way, we do these groups typically twice a year, two different sessions, 9 weeks each time. So we want people to leave our group empowered to continue working on their recovery. And they're certainly welcome to come back the next session or whatever. It's always open to do that. But we want them also working on stuff so that they can get better. So that's our final week. And then I'll also let you know that during this week, oftentimes, we invite the rest of the church to come out for a potluck. So we ask the group, the Recovery Journey group, hey, guys, next week's our final week. What would you think about doing a potluck lunch after church and during our group to invite anybody in the church that wants to come out? And we do. We have people come out for their very first time, if the group's okay with it, and they watch and they get to be part of it. It's pretty cool. So that's our final, we call it the epilogue week. So as I close out, let me just go over a couple quick things here. What are the benefits of recovery journey? Well, one of them is we have people that get restored or even become Christians because of the recovery journey. I got a picture a while back of a bunch of brothers standing around with towels around their shoulders, and the guy in the middle was all wet. And he's like, "Hey, Tim, look, we had our first baptism for this, for the recovery journey." So some people come in and become Christians. Some people that are being restored, it's a great place for them to deal with their restoration kinds of issues. Recovery journey is a great place for leadership to be built. You know, just being in there and helping other people, dealing with your own stuff, if you're a leader. Boy, guys, we in Denver, we started this thing about a dozen years ago, and I could not get any leaders to come to it for weeks. And I'm like, what is going on here in Denver? So I met with the elders at that time and the evangelists, and I just told them, I said, we got a problem in our church because our leaders don't think they need to come to this, or they're ashamed to. And it turned out it was more that shame piece. And so our evangelists and elders, they started talking about it. And like the next week or something, 2 weeks later, I had like 75 people show up. All the elders are sitting in the front row. It was great. But we had to break through that kind of that idea of leadership is supposed to be perfect kind of thing. It's just not true. Now we have leaders come all the time. Another benefit is you get connections that are made in the church that are very invaluable. You know, people learn vulnerability. Man, if there's not a Christ-like character there, you know, Jesus was very vulnerable in his life. So people that come in learn how to be vulnerable. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to be authentic and genuine and honest. People learn to change their thinking and heart, and not just the behavior. You know, some people kind of fixated on just doing the behavioral change, but we advocate thinking and heart as well. That's what sanctification is. It's the idea of, as I live my life as a Christian, I become more and more like Jesus himself. So we offer people the opportunity for more sanctification. And finally, we understand in recovery, there's going to be starts and stops. People are going to relapse. We do not teach go back to square one. We don't teach that at all. What we teach is when you relapse, you go back to your sin or whatever, what we do is we say, what have you learned so far? And that's where you start from. So learn your lesson, and then let's move on. We don't do a big guilty shame thing about go back to the beginning kind of thing. Okay, so those are some of the benefits. And actually, as you do this, over time, it'll change your whole church. A couple of years ago, John Lusk, who was our preacher at the time, we had about 400 people at this auditorium, and he was preaching on change. And he said, I want to ask you guys a question. If you would, if you've been to the recovery journey, or you've been to the grief recovery groups, grief journey, would you please stand up? And I'm in the audience. I'm like, oh my gosh, because I didn't really know how many people had come. And about 250 people stood up. Well over half the church stood up that over the years had come to one of these ministries. And it hit me that, you know, when you do this long enough for a church, your whole church can actually change. And our church has become a much more loving, aware, vulnerable group of people than we ever were before that. And, you know, a lot goes into that, of course, other reasons as well. But when you do this consistently, you can see the whole church change. So in conclusion, think differently. Focus on how Jesus treated the hurting. Keep using your resources and stay socially connected. That's kind of what I've covered in a lot of this here today. So before we go to question and answer time, what do we do next? You might be sitting there going, oh my gosh, that guy won't quit talking. Man, it's a lot. And it was a lot, and I threw a lot at you. So here's what I tell people. If you want to get this thing going, first of all, just do it. Like, it's okay to do it without knowing everything. As a matter of fact, probably the best way to learn is by going ahead and doing it first, right? It's like sharing your faith. You don't learn perfectly how to share your faith and go do it. You you stumble around and make goofy comments and things like that. That's how we learn how to share our faith. So my advice has always been just get out and start doing it, even if it's with one other person, or if you want to do a whole Bible talk, just do it and make some mistakes. And then by the time you do your first 9 weeks, you're going to be an expert. So what are some new steps, next steps? Well, review the manual. In the back of the book is, you know, how to lead a group. So go back through that. Get a small group. If you're going to do it on a church-wide basis or even a Bible talk basis, grab another person or so. Get a small team going. You know, get some help with it. You don't want to just do it all on your own. You know, find somebody. Maybe you're like me that you're really bad with details. Well, find somebody who's a detail person. And you be the idea person and let them be the detail person. You know, find out what your strength is, do that, and then find another person that can do your weaknesses. So get a small team around you. Talk to the leadership of your church. You know, talk to your ministry leader or the evangelist or, you know, maybe an elder or people that are in leadership positions. Let them know what you're doing. Let them know that this is going to be something that I think is going to really help the church out. We want to stay connected with you. Now, we're not going to be able to tell you who comes to it. That's confidential. But work with the leaders in your church, and you'll find that you'll get a lot better results when the leaders are on board with you. And guys, there may be a little bit of convincing to do there. I'll be honest, I travel the world, and there are still churches that are unsure of things like this. So you may have to, you know, start small and maybe convince them a little bit. You know, get the details going, location, days, times, details. Am I going to bring water bottles or not? How do we advertise it kind of thing? So do all those detailing kind of deals. Pray about it. Say, listen, God, these are your people. We want to help them. Please guide us. Give me strength. Give me insight. Bring me people to help me advertise that thing. Don't get discouraged. It takes a while. I had one situation early on where one person showed up, and I told my wife, like, oh, I'm done. I'm not going to do this anymore. And of course, my wife said, Tim, if you can help one person, why wouldn't you do that? And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So there are times where things can get really discouraging. Just hang in there with it. Another thing that you want to remember as the next step is other issues might surface. You may run into people that come that their issues are bigger than even what you're able to offer. You know, like you might have somebody coming that whose lives are in such bad shape that your group is not enough. I tell those people to please keep coming to our group, but also I'm going to refer you out. So I think you need some, maybe you need private counseling. Maybe you need some time with the elders. Maybe you need to go find another group to be part of also. It's okay to be part of two groups. We've had people that come to our group and then they also go to an outside group for various reasons. So refer people out when you get the sense that, boy, you need a lot of help on this thing. And then finally, people ask a lot of questions about the pairings or the small groups, the connection groups. Again, the only thing we do is we pair them or we put them in groups based on their gender, but not based on really anything else, unless they want to. So that might be a question in the chat room that we're going to deal with. So that's what you do next. And then, like I said, the group, when people come to group, if they're kind of serious about it, they're going to want to get a book. To show up without a book is pretty minimal. I mean, I guess you could and you get some benefits out of it, but you really need the book. You can buy the book at inmotioncounseling.org. If you're going to buy a box of books, you can shoot me an email and I'll give you a decent discount on them. So some churches decide to buy a box of 20 or 30, and then I give you like a 25% discount on those books. So you just got to shoot me an email, and I can get them out within a day or so. So inmotioncounseling.org.
About his dreams. how pertaining to Israel, how Israel
I'll make sure I put that link in the chat room, and then I'll also put the PDF of my PowerPoint. So that's my presentation here, guys. Thank you so much for putting up with all my technology snafus. But now we are going to have a time to do Q&A. And I want to thank you, first of all, just for staying with me. That's a lot. So let me do this before I go on anymore.
So Tim, I wrote down all the questions in order that they were coming in. If you want me to go through them, I could do that.
Would you please? That'd be wonderful.
Okay. So the first question was, during the connection, during the collection group, the 10 minutes talk time, is there a person you assigned to facilitate that time?
Yeah, thank you for that. And I didn't talk a lot about the facilitators. We do train facilitators. They have a very minimal role. And oftentimes, because people come and go, we don't even have a trained facilitator be one of the three. The biggest thing for facilitator is if the two biggest things a facilitator does is just to make sure that nobody's hogging the group, or like going over bounds, or nobody's interrupting, that kind of thing, or nobody's discipling. And then the other big thing is if somebody talks about harming themselves. So we do some pretty quick and easy training for that, but it's not like a big deal. Okay. So in the back of the in the appendix, there's a section on facilitation. But over the years, we've decided that it's not as big a deal as we kind of started off with. We were able to get by without that pretty much. But there usually is somebody that's been around the block a few times that can kind of make sure nothing bad happens. And honestly, guys, over the years, very few issues arise. Most of our Christians, they know how to behave. It goes pretty well.
Okay. So the next question is the time for digging deeper journal time different from the 10-minute connection group time?
Yes. So 10-minute connection group is you're sitting in a circle with two other people talking for 10 minutes each. The digging deeper is you go home by yourself, and it's basically journaling time. It's time to look in the book that week. What did Tim say during the devotional that kind of hit me in my specific thing? So if I'm there because of impurity issues, then what was it when Tim talked about forgiveness last week? How does that apply to me in my own situation? So you're kind of doing this personal dive into your own life.
Thank you. All right, so the next question, do you let the group in the beginning know under which circumstance you are required to report abuse, suicide, et cetera?
Absolutely. Yeah, you bet. We make that very clear, definitely on day one, and then we bring it back up maybe every other week or so, just to remind people. We don't, again, we don't make a huge deal out of it, but obviously it's only fair to people to know that. We definitely the first week we're pretty clear about it.
Okay. And there's another question that's related to that. It says, if you have a teenager in your group, do you report any abuse or suicide to parents or authorities?
Yeah, boy, that's a really good, tricky question there. So when teenagers come, first of all, we don't have an age limit. We have a maturity limit. So if a teenager wants to come, We talk to them a little bit, and if we have a lot of teens that want to come, we designate kind of like a, not the teen leader, but we designate a couple that can kind of help us out with that. So they're usually kind of a young, cool couple that have some maturity about them, and we let them kind of go underneath that couple But as far as with teenagers, if they talk about suicide or abuse, what we do is we basically tell the teen, your parents are going to need to know about this. Would you like to be the one to tell them? And I'll sit with you. Or do you want me to go talk to them? But either way, somebody's got to talk to the parents. So we kind of worked that out with our elders here in Denver, and they felt like that was the way to go with it, because they're still under their parents' care. So, but we're very gentle about it. We know this is a big, big, big deal. But at the end of the day, yeah, we need to get mom and dad involved.
I would like to also add, if anyone in our region comes into that situation, we do have church policies that we have here in New York. So you can talk to me or Shayla about those specific questions or issues that may come up in terms of children being abused or self-harming.
Right. Very good.
Okay. Is there any difference between our disciples in motion and recovery journey? Or what?
No, they were just rebranded. So they're the exact same. I'd say recovery journey is definitely updated. The book is definitely updated from the previous little book that I'd written.
Okay. And can the recovery groups be co-ed and the connection groups can the recovery groups be co-ed and the connection groups by gender?
Yeah, so the general population is co-ed for sure. And I don't even, guys, whatever your church does, but it doesn't matter to me who leads it, like leads the devotionals. We've had women do that in front of people. It's no big deal for us. But whatever your church does on that is, up to you guys. And then the small groups, the connection groups are definitely just gender-based. And that's just because, people are more comfortable doing that with people of the same gender.
Okay. And is it necessary to have both a mentor and additional support like a book while going through the group sessions, or is having a mentor good enough?
Both are good enough. You need both. Like the book you use, the working as a program, that's essential because it's where you're going to learn the ins and outs of your issue. So you've got to have something that's helping you go through your problem, because your problem is going to be different than the person next to you, right? Remember, anybody for any reason can come. So the reason you came is probably different than the guy next door to you. So you need specific help. The mentor is that human that you get to sit down and talk to and share your story with, and how they help you.
Okay. So this one goes with the, when you were talking about progress, says, how can people measure their own progress?
I've never been asked that before. Hold on a second. I'm just writing something. I just put the PDF and the website in the chat room for everybody to look at. The Bible says when other people see your progress, that's always a good one, right? When other people come up and say, wow, you're really different. You've changed. That's always good. But how do you measure your own progress? Well, obviously there's going to be like, I haven't looked at porn for a month, or I've been able to finally tell somebody about this part of my life, or, there's definitely things you've done now that you never did before. And I think when you look back through the journaling part of your work, you're going to see progress. You're going to definitely see progress in the way you think. So, those are the things I think about as far as progress.
Okay. We have three more from the chat that I wrote from the chat. I know people are, and then we'll unmute. If there's not a group in your church, how do you find groups if they are to be confidential?
Well, I mean, we I mean, I, as an elder, I talk about this outside of recovery journey, guys. We've got to become a lot more confidential anyways. So, you know, we had this bad culture in a previous church I was part of, where if I told somebody my stuff, it was likely I was going to hear it from somebody else later that week. Like, hey, how you doing in this area of your life, Tim? And I'm like, how'd you find out about that? Well, so-and-so told me. So, you know, we have these really loose boundaries. So I talk to people all the time about, I am not going to tell anybody what you told me unless you give me permission. Even the idea of I'm just going to go get advice about it, you can't do that and use the person's name if you don't have permission to do it. It's not right. It's not fair. So I always ask people permission. If I need advice, I'll ask them. And if they say no, I'm like, okay, that's fine. Usually they say, yeah, please go get help, you know, because they want help. But we insist upon confidentiality and safety. It's a non-negotiable. If you don't have it, then don't do the ministry because it's not going to work. And again, over the years, very, very few times have we ever had to address it. And usually when we had to address it, it's the guy just made a mistake. They didn't do it intentionally. They just made a mistake and told somebody else about it. But even then, we're still pretty kind of tough on it because it's so important.
Yeah.
Hold on 1 second. Let me just ask a clarifying question, Tim. So the group itself, like having the group is not confidential. It's just who's participating in the group is confidential. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, to have the group, obviously if it's confidential, no one's going to know we're doing it. So, you know, people walk in, no big deal. We don't try to hide that. Matter of fact, you know, we're advertising it. It's what's said in the group or the fact that certain people attend it. So I had my evangelist call me once and he's like, hey, I heard so-and-so's coming to Recovery Journey. How's he doing? And I said, well, actually, I don't know. It's none of my business. And I wouldn't tell you anyways if I did know. You can go talk to him, please. And if he wants to share with you, that's great. But I'm not permitted to let you know that he's even coming. So that really makes a big difference to people when they know that this stuff is confidential. I had a woman once tell me, she said, Tim, in our connections group today, I talked about being abused sexually as a child. She said, I've never, ever told anybody that, even in my studies, because I never felt safe enough. But today, because I've been coming a couple of weeks, I felt safe enough. So I opened up. It's amazing taking a burden off my shoulders. So this woman had been a Christian like 25 years or something. So that's the power of safety and confidentiality.
Thank you. Thanks for clarifying that. And then the last question, pre-Q&A, somebody asked about the recordings. Yes. So the prior sessions are on our website already on the audio section, and this will be as well. So another question in regards to, is please confirm that IPI is the resource to use for your books.
You can get it at IPI, but I also, I do self-publishing with it. And I can do that. There's a thing called KDP. It's with Amazon. They do they'll send it right out for me. They'll print it and send it out. And I charge less. So on this particular book, all my other books are on IPI as well, but this particular book, I try to advertise through my website because I can give you a better price on it and I can get it out quicker. And this is a book that I completely built on my own. So I try to sell it through my website, but either way, you can get the Recovery Journey either at inmotioncounseling.org or ipibooks.com. And okay. Since I don't charge for most of what I do, it's like the only way I can recover some of my costs is just by selling books.
Okay. So I've opened up the allow people to unmute themselves. You should be able to unmute yourself if you want to ask additional questions if you're having difficulty.